1972, Joey Gallo killed in Little Italy during dinner at Umberto's Clam House.
An hour from now, for you tonight, or 100 years from now, I'm in jail. I mean,
they get there by violence, and often as not, they leave by violence.
Between $3 and $5 million in cash and valuables was taken from the Lufthansa cargo terminal out at Kennedy Airport.
I can give you guys $500,000 a year without a problem.
New York City is a war zone for mobsters and their targets.
Hello everyone, and welcome into part 2 of episode 52 of The Black Hand, an organized crime history podcast. I'm your host, Bliss Grieve, and on today's show, we're going to be finishing up our look into the history of the Latin Kings. In part 2, we're going to be talking about the spread of the Latin Kings across the United States, including their rise in activity in their newfound homes, as well as their evolution to a transnational organization, attempted law enforcement crackdowns on the gang, and how the Kings have made it through all the attempts to remain one of the largest and most active street gangs in the entire U.S. Before we get started, if you want to support the show, please rate it and go follow the show's Instagram and Twitter pages at The Black Hand Pod. And please feel free to reach out. Also, consider giving a little bit to the show's Venmo at The Black Hand Pod as well. The link's in the description. But without further ado, let's get right into today's episode. When we left off last week, the Latin Kings had become a major gang throughout Chicago and its surrounding areas, with operations in essentially the entirety of both the north and south side of the city, as well as in suburbs like Maywood, Cicero, and Melrose Park. Then, in the early 1980s, the Latin Kings were putting more sleeper cells in the suburbs and were beginning to bust out in some suburbs like Rockford, Cicero, Berwyn, and Joliet. So by the mid-1980s, the Kings were spreading into even more suburbs, and the sleeper cells were opening up and taking in suburban kids interested in gangbanging. And by the late 80s, the Latin Kings were now in the majority of DuPage County, Will County, Lake County, and Kane County suburbs, and all of Cook County. In Will County, they started recruiting out of early 80s sleeper cells in Romeoville and Bolingbrook. And in DuPage County, they opened sets in suburbs like Addison, Schaumburg, Downers Grove, and Westmont. At the same time, the gang was aggressively expanding their empire and were looking for more angles to expand their cocaine, marijuana, and heroin pipelines by putting soldiers in the suburbs. They also grew into other states and even small towns in rural Illinois. And as the Latin Kings continued to grow, by the late 1980s, tensions with other gangs heated up and more violence ensued. The Kings wanted to flex their muscle and show their dominance in the streets by displaying several acts of violence, which would eventually bring about early tensions with fellow gangs within the People Nation Alliance. This was seen as necessary because Latin Kings had to look out for each other more so than any other group out there, and members needed to make a living on the streets without interference. However, inter-alliance wars were often smoothed over after short periods of time in the late 1980s, but the gang was about to have a much bigger problem to deal with. Because in the summer of 1988, Ramon Santos, the very man who had united all the gangs that created the Latin King Nation in 1964, had suddenly disappeared. Some rumors flew around that it was an internal hit on his life, but there's no confirmation of that, while other rumors claim that Santos had fled the country, but once again, there was no evidence of this and no body has ever been found. And in the end, the fact is that Santos didn't vanish or get killed. He instead simply kept a lower profile than ever. Regardless, right after his disappearance from the streets, the Latin Kings were officially left in command to the incarcerated Raul Gonzalez and Gustavo Colon. They now ran the organization from behind bars and took the Latin Kings in a new direction, which would bring about higher profits and more dominance in the streets. And this was the same point that they started having minor conflicts with fellow People Nation gangs. Despite that, in 1988, Latin Kings moved to the Gage Park community to address issues that newly arrived Hispanic youths were having while they moved into a mostly white neighborhood. The neighborhood wasn't welcoming of Hispanic people, and racial tensions ensued. So Latin Kings settled differences with a white group called the Southside Heads and absorbed many of their members into Latin Kings. This new Gage Park branch grew exponentially and became the notorious Crown Town Latin Kings we know today. But around the same time, there was another kind of expansion, the likes of which the Latin Kings had never seen before, and one that would open the door for their expansion across the entire United States. And in 1986, a Chicago Latin Kings member named Louis King Blood Felipe founded the Bloodline faction of the Latin Kings in the New York State Collins Correctional Facility. And in the early 1980s, to avoid imprisonment for his criminal activities in Chicago, Louis Felipe fled to New York. But soon after his arrival in New York, he was arrested and convicted of murdering his girlfriend. And it was during this bid in 1986 that Felipe started his own chapter of the Latin Kings, known as the Bloodline, or the Almighty Latin King and Queen Nation, and designated himself as the supreme leader of the gang in New York. From 1986 to 1994, the Bloodline solidified its status as a gang through crimes like racketeering, murder, and other offenses covered under the RICO Act. In 1991, Felipe was returned to prison after a short release for parole violations, stemming from him receiving stolen goods. Regardless, he continued to guide the Bloodline members, who now numbered about 2,000, both incarcerated and free. But in 1994, with the rapid growth of the Latin Kings, an internal power struggle erupted and violence within the gang ensued. So between June 1993 and February 1994, 7 Latin Kings were murdered. And following the outbreak of internal gang violence, Felipe and 19 others were charged with murder and racketeering. The indictment process ended in 1995 with 39 Latin Kings indicted under the RICO Act, while Felipe himself was charged with ordering the murder of a man named William Cartagena, who had been taken to an abandoned Bronx apartment where he was strangled, decapitated, mutilated, and set on fire. And although Felipe was in prison at the time, the government later alleged that he had put out a kill-on-site order to all Latin Kings for the murder of Cartagena. This letter, and many others, were how Felipe was initially linked to 3 murders on the streets of New York, while testimony from former kings was used as further evidence of the orders. The letters had been copied and stored by the New York Department of Corrections, who were not aware of the significance of the letters, until a federal task force was formed that included NYPD homicide investigators, FBI agents, and DOC investigators, which would curb the rise of the Bloodline faction temporarily, but we'll be coming back to it soon. Because in the 1990s, the Motherland chapter back in Chicago had their own problems to deal with. And in 1991, the Latin Kings developed an anybody killer policy, where they declared war on several other People Nation gangs, or pushed several others to start war with them. Some notable allies they began the war with around 1991 were the Latin Counts, Bishops, Cullerton Deuces, some Vice Lord Sets, and Insane Deuces. The rival Folk Alliance also began engaging in several inter-alliance wars that same year. Therefore, the Kings didn't really need their allies as much anyway. The Latin Kings in Chicago were so large by this point that it became too difficult to contest the dominance that many Latin King chapters felt on the streets. Not only that, but by the early 1990s, As drugs became a hotter commodity for gangs to deal in general, other gangs wanted a bigger chunk of the profits in the streets, and demanded that the Latin Kings back away from certain zones that were designated for the gang. In many of these cases, the Kings would refuse to negotiate, and conflict would ensue. Despite this, by the early 1990s, the Latin Kings could be found in every suburban town in Chicago, whether there was an active chapter or not. And more than that, the gang had spread to all 50 states and even other countries as well, especially Mexico. And around this time, there would be some good news for the Kings. Because in 1995, longtime co-leader Raul Gonzalez was released from prison and began running things on the streets, especially all down the 26th Street corridor. But the stretch of the gang's leadership actually being on the outside wouldn't last very long. Because by 1997, 14 Latin King members and associates, including Gustavo Colon, were charged with running a drug operation that distributed $6 million worth of crack and powder cocaine, marijuana, and heroin throughout Chicago. And in a stroke of incredible misfortune, the gang's co-leader, Gustavo Colon, who had been locked up since 1971, was just a day from getting out, until he was brought up on RICO charges resulting from the drug case, and is currently spending the rest of his life in federal prison. Similarly, in 1996, Raul Gonzalez was imprisoned once again on felony drug charges as well, and was also sentenced to life in prison. But despite their imprisonment, it was no different than before, and they retained their power as co-leaders of the gang while inside. However, while the Motherland chapter of the Latin Kings was repeating their old cycle, their bloodline faction in New York was actually trying to reshape their image. It all started following Louis Felipe's conviction in 1996, when he passed on his leadership to a member named Antonio King Tone Fernandez, who became the new supreme leader of the Latin Kings in New York State. And from then on, the Bloodline faction began a transformation, starting with Latin Kings and Queens beginning to appear en masse at political demonstrations in support of the Latino community. To further its efforts to legitimize, the organization started holding monthly meetings at St. Mary's Episcopal Church in West Harlem. By this point, the membership of the Bloodline faction was believed to have swelled to 3,000 incarcerated members and 4,000 free, and the monthly meetings at St. Mary's drew a regular attendance of between 500 and 600 members. Internal changes to the gang also began to take place, as Fernandez amended the Bloodline manifesto to even include parliamentary elections and new procedures for handling inter-gang grievances. He also pushed to remove death as a possible punishment, replacing it with vanishing or the act of being banished from the gang. But of course, this new wave for the organization wouldn't last long, because 1997 began with Antonio Fernandez and 31 others being arrested in a raid on the Lower East Side of Manhattan and charged with disorderly conduct. Then, the Special Commission of Investigation for Schools charged the Bloodline faction with infiltrating the school system. And in the aftermath, a security guard with 5 years of service was dismissed on charges of unprofessional conduct for his association with the Latin Kings. Finally, the year came to a close with Fernandez being arrested in December 1997 by the FBI for domestic abuse, charges that were dropped in early 1998. But following the release of Fernandez, a joint operation that included the FBI, NYPD, Immigration and Naturalization Services, New York State Police, and the DEA came to a close, and it ended up causing 92 arrests of suspected Bloodline Latin King members, half of whom the gang's leadership insisted weren't members. The operation, named Operation Crown, cost the city over $1 million and took 19 months to complete. Afterwards, Fernandez was released after 4 days on a $350,000 bail, which was paid for by the mandatory dues that the Bloodline treasurer had collected from the community every week. Over half of the arrested were charged with misdemeanors, while others were charged with weapons possession and drug trafficking. Despite that, Fernandez was eventually permitted to attend monthly meetings while under house arrest. And it was during his time under house arrest that the Latin Queens underwent a shakeup in leadership, dismissing many of their leaders in order to bring in more politically focused members. As a result, during this period, the Latin Kings began to gain some legitimacy within the Puerto Rican nationalist movement, starting when Lolita Lebron, a member of the party, who served 25 years in federal prison for her participation in a 1954 attack on the U.S. Capitol, alongside other Puerto Rican militants, enlisted the Bloodline faction to protect her during a demonstration in front of the United Nations headquarters. Following the UN demonstration, Rafael Miranda, another Puerto Rican nationalist who spent 25 years in federal prison for the same crimes as Lebron, attended a monthly meeting for the gang. And before the year's end, Adelfa Vera, another Puerto Rican activist, attended a monthly meeting and was given Latin King beads by the present leadership of the Bloodline faction. But in 1998, Antonio Fernandez pleaded guilty to conspiracy to sell and distribute heroin and was sentenced to 13 years in prison. He has since been released and possibly returned to gang leadership if he ever abdicated in the first place. And though the Bloodline and Motherland chapters of the Kings were facing problems, that didn't stop the rapid expansion of the gang overall in the 1990s. And one of the crazier chapters that would come out of the era popped up in the city of Holland, Michigan, with members who had ties to the Chicago Heights branch of the Motherland Latin Kings. Concerns about gang activity in Holland date back to the early 1990s and took on urgency in March 1993 when Joe Martinez and Albert Rosales were nearly stabbed to death outside of a Little Caesars on West 18th Street. The assailants were part of an Asian gang that called themselves the Crips. In the beginning, the Holland Latin Kings looked at themselves as a bunch of neighborhood kids who spent their time playing basketball and football. But as time went on, they started selling drugs, assaulting rivals, doing drive-bys, and firebombing houses. And in September 1997, a fire was set outside of a gang rival's house on North Calvin Street in Holland Township, following a drive-by shooting of the very same home. However, it was in the summer of 1999 that firebombs raised alarms and made headlines. That summer, a firebomb gutted a house on College Avenue, and in total, firebombs were thrown at 6 houses in Holland that year. 2 occupied houses burned down, and though no one was injured, the late-night attacks worried many. That same summer, led by then-Holland Mayor Alan McGeehan, over 500 people marched peacefully through Holland neighborhoods, calling for an end to the violence. And in January 2000, then-U.S. Attorney Michael Detmer announced federal charges in connection with the firebombing on College Avenue, and several arrests resulted from the announcement. And it was through similar prosecution efforts that the Holland Latin Kings were forced to quiet down for a little bit, but it wouldn't last forever. But the gang would expand other places in the meantime. The Latin Kings in Connecticut started in the state's prison system in the late 1980s and has since grown in numbers to 200. On June 30th, 1994, 16 Latin King members, including the 4 highest-ranking members in the state at the time, were arrested in Bridgeport and New Haven and charged with conspiring to sell cocaine and heroin, resulting in Louis Millet, president and highest-ranking officer in the Connecticut Latin Kings at the time, being sentenced to life in prison in January 1996. Another Latin King hub that came out of the early 1990s was Rhode Island. An investigation by the FBI into gang activity in Rhode Island found that the Providence chapter of the Latin Kings, made up of around 100 members, has been active in narcotics trafficking, gun running, extortion, and murder since at least September 1994. By the late 1990s, the Latin Kings had even expanded into Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and in 1998, 33 members of the Latin Kings in Milwaukee were charged in a RICO indictment. According to the indictment, the gang members were responsible for 9 murders, 21 attempted murders, 9 robberies, 3 arsons or attempted arsons, 5 kidnappings, and drug dealing over an 11-year period. And in the aftermath of the crackdown, gang-related violence escalated on Milwaukee's south side following the indictments, as a perceived lack of leadership in the Latin Kings prompted rival gangs to attempt takeovers. Then, in 2005, another police crackdown on the Milwaukee faction came down, resulting in 49 Latin King members being indicted on federal racketeering charges. For crimes including 4 murders, 38 attempted murders, and widespread drug trafficking. But in the midst of this outward expansion, a Kings member was about to switch it up by expanding on an already controlled territory. And in 2002, a New York Latin Kings member named Diego Matillo formed the Black Mob set of the Bloodline chapter, which eventually numbered 300. The fear and power wielded by the Black Mob amplified Mateo's own personal reputation, making him at one point the highest-ranking Latin King on the entire East Coast. As a leader of the Black Mob, Mateo oversaw the set's operations and also ordered and participated in acts of violence and narcotics trafficking, which will come back to bite him later. Then, in February 2002, the Latin Kings in Spain were founded in Madrid by an Ecuadorian national named Eric Javier Vara. Branches then followed in Barcelona, Valencia, and Murcia. Membership in Spain is predominantly Ecuadorian, though other Latin American and Spanish youths have also been recruited. According to a report by the Madrid Government Commission, there are approximately 100 active members and 600 associates in the city alone. Gangs like the Latin Kings were able to spread to Spain as a result of mass deportations from the United States of Latin American immigrants with criminal records, but it wouldn't be long before law enforcement pushed back. It started when Eric Javier Vara was given a 40-year sentence in 2006, followed by both of his lieutenants in 2011. Then, the inner circle of the Latin Kings in Madrid was dismantled when 44 members were arrested during a police operation carried out in February 2010. 5 key members were deported from Madrid in 2015, and just 4 months after that, 23 members were arrested in the Barcelona metropolitan area suspected of organized crime membership, drug trafficking, assault, and extortion. However, it wasn't just Latin American law enforcement hitting the gang hard. In between October 2002 and May 2003, 47 Latin Kings, including 11 holding senior leadership positions, were charged in connection with a New Jersey State Police investigation called Operation Catapult. The investigation successfully tracked and documented Latin King activity in 5 counties, and resulted in charges related to the planned attempted murder of a rival gang member, the sale of heroin, crack cocaine, and marijuana, the theft and resale of stolen automobiles and other stolen property, as well as the possession, use, and sale of prohibited assault weapons. In the meantime, another investigation called Operation Dethrone had been underway. In this investigative unit, known as the Western Massachusetts Gang Task Force, consisted of the FBI, the Chicopee Police Department, the Hampton County Sheriff's Department, the Holyoke PD, the Massachusetts State Police, as well as the Springfield and West Springfield Police Departments. The first phase of investigation went after the Lawrence chapter of the Latin Kings and was converted to an organized crime DEA task force / high-intensity drug trafficking area case, involving numerous federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. And after the significant disruption of the Lawrence chapter in February 2004, information provided by cooperating defendants led to the significant disruption of the Springfield chapter in June 2005, resulting in the indictments of 57 Latin Kings. To start 2006, a year-long investigation by the DEA and the St. Paul Police Department, known as Operation Wild Kingdom, culminated in the arrests of 26 Latin King members and associates on federal narcotics and firearms trafficking charges. During a series of arrests carried out across the Twin Cities area in Minnesota on March 7, 2006. Then, on August 20, 2006, 39 leading Latin King members, including every known leader of the gang in Florida, were arrested after law enforcement raided a high-level meeting at a rented club in Tampa. The raid followed a 14-month investigation and resulted in the gang members being charged with conspiracy to commit racketeering. And though there would be a few years of calm, by 2008, law enforcement continued their assault, and in January of that year, the ATF began investigating the Latin Kings' Maryland-based Royal Lion Tribe, following the firebombing of a house in Rockville. After building a RICO case against the gang, the ATF and local police arrested 18 members during a series of coordinated raids on November 19, 2009. And by March 2011, all 18 defendants had either pleaded guilty or been convicted for their roles in a racketeering conspiracy. Then, a dozen Latin Kings were among 34 people indicted on drug charges following a year-long investigation called Operation Royal Flush, which included the FBI, Cleveland Division of Police, and the Cuyahoga County Sheriff's Office. In a series of raids coinciding with the indictments led to the arrests of 29 people in Cleveland on August 13, 2019. And finally, to close out the 2000s, there would be a move by law enforcement north of the border. When 9 members of the Latin Kings in Toronto were arrested in October 2009 under the Immigration Act and Immigration and Refugee Protection Act after a 2-year police sting known as Project Royal Flush, which resulted in 4 Latin King members, including Ecuadorian citizen Flavio Mauricio Reyes, who founded the Canadian branch of the gang in 2003, being deported from Canada in July 2010. But this trend of law enforcement cracking down on the gang continued into the mid to late 2010s. And in December 2011, 13 Latin King members were indicted by a federal grand jury in Greensboro, North Carolina, for conspiring to participate in a racketeering enterprise. 9 were convicted of various crimes under the RICO Act in 2013, including Jorge Cornell, founder of the Latin Kings in North Carolina, who was sentenced to 28 years in prison. And before long, the Motherland chapter was even back in the news. And in late 2011, Augustine Zambrano, a ranking corona within the Latin Kings, making him the highest ranking member outside of prison in Chicago, and responsible for overseeing the activities of local branches within the gang, was among 18 leading Latin King members charged with racketeering conspiracy as part of a federal indictment against the gang's hierarchy. Zambrano was convicted of racketeering conspiracy-related charges involving narcotics trafficking and violence, and was subsequently sentenced to 60 years in prison. And just a little over a year later, Chicago's second-in-command on the streets, named Vicente Garcia, was sentenced to 40 years in prison on related charges. But like I said a little earlier, we'd eventually touch back on Holland, Michigan, and it was in the early 2010s that they really started re-emerging as a terror in the area. And as a result, a multi-year joint federal and state investigation of the Holland Latin Kings resulted in the prosecution of 31 gang members. The investigation, which involved the ATF, Michigan State Police, and the Holland Police Department, became public on July 19, 2012, when over 100 state and federal officers simultaneously executed search warrants at over 15 residences in a business in Holland, which were all linked to the Holland Kings. And of the 31 gang members charged, 29 pleaded guilty to racketeering offenses. However, it wasn't long before the motherland was hit again, and on July 26, 2016, 34 alleged Latin Kings were charged with racketeering conspiracy in Chicago. The gang's illegal activities were uncovered during a multi-year investigation conducted under the umbrella of the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. Then, a little less than a year later, on the East Coast, four leaders of the Latin Kings in Newark, New Jersey, were among 15 people indicted on racketeering charges on July 13, 2013, as part of Operation Peddling Misery. An investigation by the Jersey State Police and Division of Criminal Justice that targeted a drug distribution enterprise that was dealing large quantities of heroin and crack cocaine in the city. But despite all these efforts by the authorities, the Latin Kings are still incredibly active today, even more so than a lot of other street gangs still operating. And this is evident by the continued law enforcement efforts aimed at eradicating the gang, but only end up creating temporary power vacuums. And one of the biggest of these was an investigation by the Western Massachusetts Gang Task Force, consisting of the FBI, the Chicopee Police Department, the Hampton County Sheriff's Office, the Holyoke PD, the Massachusetts State Police, as well as the Springfield and West Springfield Police Departments. This investigation was called Operation Dethrone and had really started in the early 2000s, and it was needed severely, because the eastern region of the Latin Kings encompasses local chapters in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, and various other states along the eastern seaboard, from Maryland to Florida. And at the time, there were 11 active chapters operating in Massachusetts, including ones in Boston, New Bedford, Springfield, Salem, Chelsea, Lowell, Lawrence, Worcester, and Fitchburg, as well as within the Department of Corrections. But by late 2019, 500 federal, state, and local law enforcement officials executed 31 search warrants at 24 different locations, resulting in racketeering, drug, and firearms charges against more than 60 members of the Latin Kings, including the leaders of the street gang's East Coast operations, making Operation Dethrone one of the largest takedowns for the FBI in Massachusetts history. And while a majority of the arrests took place across Massachusetts, some gang members and associates were also arrested in Rhode Island and Connecticut. Among those arrested was a man named Michael Cecchitelli, with ties to the Genovese crime family, who oversaw the Latin Kings' operations from Massachusetts down to Florida. He was the conduit between each of the eastern region states and the Latin Kings' national leadership in Chicago. Authorities say that Cecchitelli and other gang leaders ran the Kings with a mafia-style hierarchy, including a council of leaders and as many as 11 chapters across Massachusetts alone. They also say that his leadership approach has become a model for other Latin King regions in the country. Aside from their operations on the outside, the Latin Kings had also grown to become the largest gang in Massachusetts prisons, with an estimated 400 members, including leaders who face charges for coordinating criminal activity outside the prison. This investigation not only hit the leadership in the region, but also severely weakened a prominent Latin king set in New Bedford, Massachusetts, which was deeply involved in selling cocaine and cocaine base, supplying customers in New Bedford and Boston. And Operation Dethrone arrested not only several high-ranking members, but also the supreme leader of Latin Kings in New Bedford, named Jose Rodriguez. And around the same time, in late 2019, 17 members and associates of the Black Mob Latin Kings set in New York were charged with racketeering offenses, narcotics conspiracy, and firearms offenses. The defendants in the case included the entire senior leadership of the gang and its most violent members, including Diego Mateo. And finally, in December 2019, ending what seemed like an intentionally concentrated wave of law enforcement activity, Eric Thomas, supreme leader of the Latin Kings in Rhode Island, was arrested and charged with conspiracy to distribute cocaine. Less than a year later, Thomas pled guilty to the charges, admitting that in August 2019, he had conspired with others to buy cocaine from members of the Latin Kings in New Bedford, Mass. For resale. And just days later, a co-conspirator was captured in a video purchasing nearly 6 ounces of coke from members in New Bedford, in a deal facilitated by Thomas. But regardless of all these efforts by authorities and even informants who have turned on the gang, the Latin Kings remain one of the largest and most active gangs in the entire U.S. The gang is believed to have anywhere from 35 to 50,000 members across the U.S., still divided between the Motherland and Bloodline factions. Latin Kings, associating with the Motherland faction, make up more than 160 structured chapters, operating in 158 cities in 34 states, and is believed to have an estimated membership of 20 to 30,000 alone, while the membership of the Bloodline faction is estimated to be as large as 7,500 members, divided among several dozen branches, operating in 15 cities across 5 states. And even with this mass following, membership in the Latin Kings is increasing rapidly, especially in the New York City area, as well as in the Middle Atlantic and Great Lakes region and the Northwest. And while they're active in 34 states, they can be found primarily in Chicago, where they are one of, if not the largest gang, as well as New York, Texas, and Florida, with some alleged cells in Central America and Spain. And they're still heavily active in drug distribution, weapons trafficking, murder, assault, armed robbery, racketeering, and extortion. And the gang will still order hits on correctional officers, rival gang members, and members who fail to follow orders. But that's really all I have for you guys today. I hope you all thoroughly enjoyed today's show, and tune back in next week for episode 53. If you enjoyed today's show, please give it a rating and follow the show's Instagram and Twitter pages at The Black Hand Pod. And please feel free to reach out with feedback, suggestions, and comments. Also, consider giving a little bit to the show's Venmo at The Black Hand Pod as well. But with that said, I hope you all have a great rest of your day. This is your host, Bliss Grieve, signing out.